I'll tell you when the green light goes on. Please go on. Okay, it's green light.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Heathen Hour. And today we are joined by Ben Shetner. So I'm going to say hello to everybody, Ben.
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me on, guys.
We are so excited to have you. So Ben has agreed to come on with us today to have a chat about how atheists and theists can look at the same information and come to different conclusions. But before we get into our discussion, I would like to give Ben an opportunity just to tell everybody a little bit about himself, what your background is, who you are, and what made you decide to come here today, because it's actually kind of an interesting story how we came across Ben.
Yeah, my name is Ben Shetler. I run a cultural missionary organization called Ask or Think, and we focus on giving answers to skeptical objections, and to do so with objectivity, with evidences and things like that. I was on Twitter, and Paul reached out to me, and I had just mentioned, like, yeah, I love having conversations with people, and he's like, well, you've got to connect with Shannon, and I was very impressed with the way that both Shannon and Mike, their attitude towards talking with theists, it's incredible, and so that kind of connected us together, so I'm very much looking forward to the discussion, and I think it'll be enjoyable, because it's always fun to watch worldviews collide, and that's what will happen, and so we won't beat each other up, but there will be some clashes, and I think that will be enjoyable, and if it's done with the right attitude, I think it can be incredibly profitable for everybody. So I'm looking forward to giving some ideas, but I also am very much looking forward to learning, and so I'm excited. Thanks for the invitation, Shannon and Mike.
Well, Glenn,
we are so
well, Ben, you've come to the right place for the learning, and we were nice to you before the show, but it's going to go down from here.
Oh, my goodness. Here we go. So, Ben, is there a particular starting point that you would like to work from? So we're going to have a discussion about how people can look at the same information and come to different conclusions from that base. So do you have a specific example of the type of information that you're referring to? Because full disclosure, Ben has actually picked the topic of today's conversation. So
I was hoping that it wouldn't look like that.
Oh no, I'm sorry, but we agreed to it and we think it's a great topic.
Well, have we announced the topic? The idea behind the topic is that there's intelligent people that are atheists.
Thank you, Ben.
But of course. I mean, both of you guys are intelligent. I don't know your background, but Shannon has degrees, and there's intelligent people that are atheists, but there's also intelligent theists. It's not that every theist has gone and checked their brain at the door, and so we're all looking at the same evidence. And so why is it that intelligent people would come to different conclusions on that? And that's kind of what I wanted to discuss was, you know, so that is kind of the idea behind the discussion. I don't know if you guys had more to add to that before we jump on.
No, I think that's a great base to start from. So when you say information, are you speaking specifically about a certain type of information, like scientific information?
Yeah, so here's what I would like to say, at least for me and in this conversation, and you guys can hold me to this, I have like three kind of key things with our organization that we like to put on evidence. So number one, we like it to be objective, not subjective. I think subjective evidence has a place, but I don't want to just get a bunch of quotes from theists and go like, here's proof, these are intelligent people. I want this to be objective. I want anybody to be able to look at the information. Two, I want it to be rational. A lot of Christians kind of remove rationale from the conversation. They go, well, if you want to believe God, the only way to know he even exists is to start from a point of faith. And I actually think there's rational evidences out there. So that the evidence is objective, that it's rational, and then it's explanatory. So whatever evidence I'm giving, I want it to fit within the greater picture of the world, that it will make sense. And sometimes, at least my feeling is that atheists say things and they don't fit into the greater picture of the world, or at least I hope to kind of give some idea. So that, from my perspective, what I want to give tonight will fit into that.
Okay. So what, from my perspective, just to give a little bit of a counterpoint to that, I feel that as an atheist, I'm able to look at evidence without any presuppositions or preassumptions. I'm fully open after reviewing any evidence for it to lead me in any direction, because I'm not constrained by having to have it fit into an existing ideology. My ideology is malleable. So if I look at something and it changes the direction of what I think, I'm free to shift in that direction. I don't have to hit a wall, because shifting in that direction means that I have to cut off a belief that's important to me. So that's a little bit of an objection to what you have just said. Can you give an example of where you think an atheist would look at something and come to a different conclusion because of what you had just said, as opposed to what I just brought up? Or do you have
Absolutely. Well, one thing is, I feel very truth-driven. So if... be careful what I said. I don't believe that the evidence is going to lead us to a non-theistic worldview. But I believe that I'm the type of person that if you demonstrated, look, there is no God, and when you look at the world, this doesn't make sense, I would like to say that that's what I would go with. So... So here's my objection. So I have two, and it takes a little time to explain them. Do you want me to go for it, or?
Yes, sure. Definitely.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't want to be the talker, but I do. These will take a little time. I'll go through both of them. If you want to separate the two, that's fine. But I have two objections to the way that atheists proceed with looking at the facts. And I'm sure you can, you'll go give the other side. So I'll let you do that. But the first is the misuse of the term science. So I believe in science, but I think that you have two types of science. You have hard science and you have soft science. Hard science is what is testable, observable, repeatable, stuff that's being done in the laboratory. And any hard science that you give me, I'm not going to disagree with that. But what happens is what I call soft science is we take what is testable, observable, repeatable, and then we build theories on top of that, like what the world could look like, but we can't test it or repeat it. And I feel like sometimes atheists go, well, science says this, and it's more of that soft science. And here's an example of what I'm trying to say. So I watched one of your videos, Mike, on and one of it had the banana from Ray Comfort. That's right. That's like a pretty big objection in the atheist world. Is that correct?
I just use it for comedy.
So, and it's funny, but here's what I mean by that, because it actually comes from like a great, and it was funny, by the way. You have a way with your videos that you put a lot of comedy. I like, but he talked about how like how this banana, like it fit the top of the hand. Like it was, in my opinion, the conclusion was, I would not use that as evidence.
Thankfully. You don't want to end up in one of my videos. Come on.
But what I will say, though, is that's science, though. And what I mean by that is he used science and then built on a conclusion. So the fact that bananas are shaped a certain way is testable, observable, repeatable. It's science. We all agree with that. But then the conclusion he added to it was what, you know, you object to. And I feel like sometimes we go, well, a scientist is going to use this and then add to these conclusions. And I feel like that's where the problem comes in, is we call the conclusion science. And I think there's a lot of cosmology that's like, well, if the world is this way, then this is true. But we don't know if the world or the universe is this way. And so that's not really science. And so that would be my first objection.
Okay.
So I wanted to ask because I didn't want to clarify. I just wanted to clarify. I'm not sure if you're like, do you believe in like things like the Big Bang, and stuff like that? Are you like a Bible literalist or not?
Yeah, I would consider myself a literalist in the sense that you should take the Bible literally where it's intended to be taken literally. Does that make sense?
So how do you differentiate what is supposed to be taken literally and what's supposed to be taken allegorically?
Yeah, I feel like it's from the context of the passage, so I don't pick and choose. But when, you know, when the Bible uses metaphors, that is clear. I should have an example off the top of my head. I'm sorry, I just don't. But yeah, I would primarily consider myself to be a literalist for the most part.
So you don't, do you believe in the Big Bang then?
Well, it's almost something that I really don't want to jump into. Here's the thing. I don't believe that there is enough evidence for the Big Bang. So I believe in the Big Bang? Yes. Here's what I absolutely do believe is undoubtedly. I'm being very non-committal here, which is going to take everybody off, even in the Christian world. So here's what I believe. That certainly creation was dynamic and that it was spoken by God. So God spoke the world into existence. The specifics of that, I don't believe are super clear. I mean, like, other than God said it and it occurred. So I believe that the creation was dynamic, and I also believe that Adam and Eve were formed out of the dust of the ground. So God, literally, he reached into earth, so he didn't speak Adam and Eve's existence. He reached into the earth, he formed it with his hands, he made them out of the dust of the ground, and then breathed into them. So I would say very, very literalist. The Big Bang may be an attempt to explain how God spoke the world into existence, but I don't think I would believe it. I certainly wouldn't believe it in the way that you guys would express it. Is that too non-committal?
So you don't believe in the scientific theory. You just believe that it might be a way of somebody explaining what the Bible says, but not the actual theory.
So this is my whole objection. So why would you call it a scientific theory if it can't be tested or repeated?
I believe that you would call it a scientific theory, and because there's
Are you still there?
Oh, you froze on us, Ben. Oh, Ben.
Oh, no.
I got you, Ben. You're still there. Yeah, you're still there.
You're still there? Can you hear us?
Uh-oh.
Can you? Uh-oh. Oh, no, Ben.
Did we lose Ben?
I don't know. Oh, goodness.
Oh, I hope not.
I hope not.
He looks like he's working furiously.
Oh, bless Ben's heart. His computer big banged. The Holiday Inn Express internet isn't working out well.
Oh, no, we lost Ben.
We lost Ben. We're going to try to get Ben back, guys.
Oh, no.
We lost. Oh, I think.
Oh, guys, I am so sorry.
That's okay.
I just have to fix it.
You're at the mercy of the internet. You can hear me though, right?
Yeah, I can hear you great. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Okay.
So sorry, guys.
That's okay. Totally fine. It's totally fine.
We just got to our first point of contention, which was kind of exciting.
I know. Well, I remember what it is, so I'll pick up. So you had said that
While you guys talk, I'm just going to try to fix your what your faces look like and stuff, because they're all messed up now.
We're messed up on the stream. Okay. Yeah, that's okay.
I'm so sorry, guys.
Nope, that's okay, Ben. Not your fault.
So your point of contention was that, you know, calling the theory of the Big Bang theory science is kind of goes to your first point, which was that you believe that science, you know, when it's material and testable and in a lab and you can, you know, see tangible physical results from an experiment, that would be your kind of definition of science. I extend upon that in my definition because I look at it's not so much what you would think or what you expressed, which is that people make retroactive theories based on what they see today in science and that they don't have any predictive validity. I believe that it's more nuanced than that because it has to do with multiple fields. Like for example, the theory of evolution. There's multiple fields of science that combine together and make predictions by combining their collective research. And when those predictions hold, that validates that hypothesis. So, for example, when they found I think it's called Tektilaktak, it was a transitional species between water animals and land animals. They predicted that they would find it, around what strata they would find it in, and where they would find it, and they did. They found it. So that was a prediction that they made based on a multitude of fields, like geology, paleontology, biology, phylogeny, like that, all of those fields came together. All of their research pointed to one thing. So they made a prediction about that one thing, and then that prediction came to fruition. So what kind of, how could that not be science if there's multiple fields making predictions based on evidence that they can see today, and then those predictions come to fruition? What if that doesn't constitute evidence? I guess my question would be, what does, other than just, you know, physical tangible experiments? Because that limits science.
Yeah, no, and I'm not advocating for limiting science. I want it to be as effective as possible. So, and I'm not advocating for a lack of collaboration. That would be a great example of science, is you took all of these fields, geology, paleontology, archaeology, and you combined them, and you did testable, repeatable things. You found real evidence. My objection is with someone going, okay, so here is, you know, an equation that gives us insight into the universe. And so I'm going to take that equation, and then I'm going to make a theory of, you know, cosmology does this. I'm going to take a theory, and I'm going to explore based on this. I'm fine with that exploration. That is science. But the moment you say this is conclusive, but it's not yet been tested, that's the problem that I have. So let's take your analogy of this archaeological discovery. And if we took the paleontology and we took the geology and the archaeology before we ever found whatever artifact it was, and we said this artifact is true, but we hadn't done the digging yet, that to me has yet to become science. That's soft science. It's hypothetical science.
Right.
Until we dig and find it. And what I'm saying is, when you dig into the universe, what you find is a God outside of it that created it.
Okay, but isn't that the same sort of presupposition that you're arguing against? And I mean, I get what you're saying there.
Right.
So things like the Big Bang Theory, I mean, the use of theory makes it complex in that state, because really it's just a hypothesis. It's just a hypothesis that has lots of evidence pointing towards it. But it is just a hypothesis. I don't think that you would find anybody, even in the fields of cosmology or astrophysics, that would say that absolutely, yeah, that's it. Like, we're not going to look anymore. We've decided.
Would you agree, Ben, that there's evidence for the Big Bang, even if you don't agree that it's conclusive evidence?
Oh, that's a tough one. It all depends on how you define evidence. And so this gets to what I believe. So I actually believe the other direction. So my point number two is, I believe that atheists presuppose things and therefore come to false conclusions. So is there evidence for the Big Bang? Well, it depends. So if you think you and I are evidence for the Big Bang, then I would agree that if you call that evidence. I would say you and I are evidence of a creator.
Something like the background microwave
radiation,
would be evidence for a Big Bang. So would you agree that that's evidence for a Big Bang, or no?
That's tough. I'm going to go with no for now. I'm going to say that it's evidence of something, but not necessarily a Big Bang.
Okay.
All
right.
So what would you consider evidence for the God, the hypothesis that you subscribe to?
Yeah, so before I get into that, can I give you my analogy? Because this is kind of the heart and soul of what I wanted to get at tonight, and I'm sorry I've done a lot of talking. But this is kind of... So point number one is the misuse of science, which we're welcome to come back to. And point number two is ruling out evidence based on presuppositions. And I know that theists do this, but I believe that atheists do this, but they're unaware. And I feel like this... So here's an analogy, and I'm not offering this as proof. I'm just attempting to offer this as an explanation of what I see atheists doing. So this isn't proof. This is just an analogy of what I'm trying to say. Okay. So let's take like a 15-year-old boy that was born on... A hypothetical 15-year-old boy that was born on a cruise ship and lived his entire life on this cruise ship without ever leaving it. So his whole life, he's lived on a cruise ship. And one day at breakfast, he tells his mom and dad, I don't believe cruise ships exist, or any boats for that matter. I don't believe boats exist. And his parents kind of chuckled to themselves and like, okay. Well, they finish breakfast and they take him to the edge of the boat and they say, look, or the edge of the cruise ship. And they say, look, there's water. We're on this boat. Here's evidence. And they ask him, well, if you don't believe boats exist, then what are we on right now? And he goes, well, I don't know. And I want to investigate this more, but that's not evidence of a boat. And they say, well, why isn't evidence of a boat? And he goes, because boats don't exist, because of his presupposition. Well, then they take him to the captain, the architectural engineer. They take him to the actual engineer that's running the engine. And all of these people give their various evidences for the boat being a boat. And he outlaws all of those as evidence for a boat. He goes, they may be evidence of something, but it's not a boat. And they ask him, well, what is it evidence of? And he concludes with, well, I don't know what it's evidence of, but it cannot be a boat. And they say, why? And he says, because boats don't exist. And it's my feeling that atheists do the same thing with the existence of God. So God created a world. We are the result of that world. He is the creator and sustainer of everything. And so as a Christian, I'm going like, look, let me give you evidence. And you say, no, that can't be evidence of God. It's evidence of something, but it's not evidence of God. Why? Because God doesn't exist. So that is my thought on that. And so that was kind of the heart of what I wanted to get to. So go ahead.
So in your analogy, the boat is God and...
Right.
Okay. So, well, the boat you can test, right? Like you can see the boat, you can get on the boat, you can float on water on the boat, right? So I don't see how that would be an analogy for an immaterial, super powerful deity. How I don't think that analogy fits with
what because in that analogy, okay. There's something tangible to right. to look at, but to feel and to touch. So in order for that analogy to transfer well, God would have to be tangible, physical, us able to like clearly see him be clearly defined and you know, be in front of us and us still go, I don't see you, I can't hear you.
And
invisible doesn't mean non-existent. So like wind is invisible, but it's not non-existent, correct?
Sure. Right. But there's evidence of it, physical evidence. You can.
And so what I would say is there is physical evidence of God.
Like what?
Oh, am I not on camera anymore?
No. You're not. We can hear you.
That's I just gave evidence. So Newton said, Isaac Newton said that the thumb alone, he said, given the lack of evidence, the thumb alone was enough evidence to convince him of the existence of God. And once again, subjective proof, I know. But I would say evidence of God is the fact that we are here. And not only that, but the fact that we have a cognition of morality. Where did that come from? The fact that there is intricate design inside of the universe. So I would say, and I know these are typical arguments that you hear, but these are legitimate evidences of an invisible, immaterial God stepping into a material world. So that's what I would say. I would say there is evidence, but I guess at the end of the day, you have to allow that evidence to point to an immaterial God. And I feel like that is sometimes where it's not allowed. And so I would say the presupposition comes in as we say, well, there is nothing immaterial. Do you believe that it's possible that any immaterial things exist?
Yeah, possible.
It's possible. There's lots of things that are possible, but that doesn't mean that I would believe it. You know, like I often use, I don't know, you said you've watched a couple of my videos, but I often use the analogy of, you know, an invisible lazy-eyed pink dragon. Do you believe in that if I tell you about it? Probably not. Most theists I've talked to would be like, no, that's not something I would believe in because it's outlandish. And I would say the same thing about God, right? Like if you say something's invisible outside of the realm of space and time, I'm not sure if that's what you believe about your God. Most Christians I've talked to believe
so.
That. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say most Christians I've talked to believe that their God resides outside of space and time, is immaterial, is all powerful, is all knowing, and all of those things. That to me is just as outlandish a claim as somebody saying there's an invisible lazy-eyed pink dragon that eats gods for breakfast. Right? You have no reason to believe. You have no reason to believe that, and I would have no reason to really believe in your God.
What evidence do you have, and I know you're not going to like this question, but what evidence do you have for God not existing?
The negative.
Yeah.
The negative? Well, I mean, I go through that in my channel. I mean, there's like 200 videos of me explaining yeah. why I don't believe in. But I mean, I would have to go through each God claim, right? So, you know, in this case, we're just talking about.
Oh, Christian. So you've done that in your channel. So I'm sorry, I haven't listened to all your videos. I apologize.
No, but that's fine. I don't expect you to. There's 200 videos. That's a lot of. You've been spending a lot of time doing that. But I mean, like, if we're talking about the Christian God, I mean, there's obvious reasons why I wouldn't. Like I just explained about, you know, the lack of evidence, the contradictions in the Bible, you know, lots of reasons why I would not believe in God. Now, that wouldn't cover every single deity, but it would cover yours.
Okay, so let's back up though, and let's take something on a very micro scale. So let's take, and I know you're familiar with the cosmological argument. So, but I feel like it's incredibly valid. So, something had to cause this, okay? And so I look at a universe that is a chain of causes. So what caused it? And I feel like that's evidence. It may not be evidence of the. It's not evidence for the Christian God, but it's evidence for some God. Wouldn't you agree? And obviously you don't. So what do you say to that then?
What would I
in response
say?
To, okay, go
yeah,
ahead.
What do you say in response to the cosmological argument or to the idea that that the universe is a chain of causes? So someone outside the chain of causes had to be the first causer.
Well, you would have to show why something outside of those chains of causes would have to cause it.
Well, the universe. What? Name something that can cause itself. Nothing can cause. Nothing in our universe can cause itself.
Well, we know very little about how the Big Bang, for instance. I think it's something down to the power of 26 or something in time. So we've already figured out what happened up to that point. So there's only a very, very, very minuscule point that we don't understand because the laws of physics would have broken down at that point. Right, so the laws of physics as we know it, the way we would explain it, isn't understandable. So we don't know what happened there, right? So I mean, that's where you have a God of the gaps. So people like yourself might say, "Well, God did that, right?" But my answer would be, I don't know what happened there. So I'm not going to jump to the conclusion that some.
Hence, we go back to the boat. So my point is, we have a boat, and actually, the boat. No, I'm sorry. God is not the boat. The boat is the universe. And my point is that in the analogy, the boat is the universe. And so we have a boat. And so, well, no, I guess it's God. I guess it's God. But I'm saying, like, God created us and we're sustainable and we're in this world that he made. And so to say, well, I don't know, I guess that's fine. But when you look at the world and you go, well, wait a second. Where did, let's step away from the cosmological argument, then Mike, where did all the design come from? That just happened by accident? I mean, there's infinite, well, not infinite, but there's a measurable amount of design. I've got this computer, I've got this computer here, I've got my iPhone right here, oh, I'm not on camera here, but I'm holding my iPhone in my hand, and I'm telling you, like, this thing did not occur by accident. There was intelligence behind its production. So why then would we say God does not exist when we can look at all this intelligence in the world? That just happened by accident?
Okay, I know you addressed this to Mike, but I have something to say. And when you,
Shannon, whoever.
It's totally okay. I just took the pause for a second to come in because the design argument is one of the ones that the design argument and the morality argument are two arguments that I'm particularly interested in, more so the morality argument. Anyway, regarding design, now everything operates the way it does in our system, and specifically in our closed system on Earth, because it kind of can't really operate any other way, otherwise life couldn't have existed. No, from my perspective, life didn't exist in any form for billions of years before it started to slowly progress to where it is now. So that wouldn't be evidence of design from my perspective, because there was billions of years when where life couldn't be sustained on the planet we're on now. There's also many, many places on our planet that life, as we know it from our perspective, on the planet isn't necessarily sustainable. On top of that, many things, us, for instance, and many other animals, we don't have great design. Like our eyes, for example, are designed very, very poorly for what they do. The only reason they're even really effective at all for the function that they're, I guess, now intended for, is because our brain makes up for the flaws in the design of our eyes. So, like for example, I don't know if you know anything about ocular anatomy, but everything that you perceive, you're perceiving on the opposite side of your visual field. So everything on the right side of your visual field hits the left side of your eye, left side hits the right side of your eye. Then it crosses over in your brain at an optic chiasm, and it's all, and because of the way it goes through the vitreous humor in the back of the eye, it actually flips upside down and it is filled with holes. And then there's another larger hole in it where the optic nerve leaves the eye. That's the blind spot. So they're just bad. Everything we see is upside down, backwards, filled with holes, and then our brain fixes it. So that's bad design. Like, I can think of a million other ways to design these better. And then they don't work either. Like, like I've got glasses. So the design argument to me has those fundamental flaws, because there's always something you can point to. If somebody designed something perfectly, they did a bad job. Right? Because things like that you can point to. I know one of the big arguments is, I can't remember the nerve, but the nerve that like runs down and then comes back up when it could just go straight across. Laryngeal nerve. The laryngeal nerve, that's another argument for bad design. So the fact that things function and we're able to exist doesn't necessarily mean that they're designed well. It just means that we've stumbled onto, through evolutionary processes, a functional system. And because that's the only system that we know and it's effective for us day to day, we go and we are able to exist in these bodies. We go, wow, design, it's beautiful. But like there's all these fundamental flaws that could be better. So what do you say to something like that?
Shannon, have you ever read a bad book?
Yeah.
Like a poorly read book?
Yep. I just read that Placing Darwin, and that was bad.
Does that mean... Nice. Does that mean that nobody wrote them because they were poorly written?
But your argument... It doesn't mean...
Let me answer the question.
No, it doesn't mean that nobody wrote them.
Boom, game over. End the podcast now, Mike.
Mic drop. No, I don't think so. I don't really think so, though. Because we know how books are constructed. We can watch it start to finish. I know you can follow the path of a book being created from start to finish. See how it's created. And we know how it's created. And if your argument is that design is evidence for God, the fact that things are designed beautifully is evidence for God, the counter to that is that things aren't designed beautifully or necessarily even well. So
your God would be a bad mechanic.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not at that point.
No, go ahead, Ben, please.
I'm not at that point yet. So to me, I don't like conflating arguments. So let's take one thing at a time. And so if you want to argue that God is evil, he's a moral monster, that isn't an argument for its non-existence. If you want to argue that God is a bad designer, still not an argument for his non-existence. So if you're willing to say that God exists, I'm happy to have the conversation about how he's bad at things. But
that's an interesting... There's a clip for everybody. that's a good statement, Ben. I like that. Sorry, keep going.
So, but I'm going back to the point is there is design. So if you're, and Shannon, I think that's a good argument where you're saying, well, there's problems. So there's a Christian response to the problems that exist in the universe, but I don't even feel like it's appropriate yet to get there, though I'm going to jump to it. And that is the idea that these two people that God created, Adam and Eve, were created in perfection. Then they disobeyed God, and that's when all the trouble started, is they ate the fruit that God told them not to, and it brought evil into the world. And this is where I just almost tend to get a little emotional, because I will tell you, I believe this. I really, really believe this, and I may be genuinely wrong, but I believe that sin that came into the world broke everything. It messed everything up.
No crying. And that sin,
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, well, thank you, Mike. Yeah, we'll keep it light. But I believe that sin broke everything, and that sin is what keeps us from God. And without Jesus dying, paying the penalty for that sin, and rising again, then we can't have our problems fixed. And that's where I'll just say this genuinely. Like, I don't mean to be like condescending in this, but Shannon and Mike, I genuinely hope that one day you might encounter God's grace. And I don't mean that in a condescending way. I really believe that Christ is the salvation of the world. So yeah, I agree that there's problems in the world, but I believe there's a solution to those problems. So, and I do believe, I don't mean to be, and I hope I don't come across in like, well, you're dumb and you need Jesus. I hope I don't come across that way, but I do believe that Jesus is a solution to many of these problems.
I hope we don't come across as you feeling like you're dumb and you should abandon Jesus.
No, you don't at all.
I think you should abandon Jesus, but I don't think you're dumb.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I think you should accept him.
So,
Paula Gia just had a question, and he's helped out a lot getting this podcast together. So I just wanted to ask his question really quick. Where did it go? He said, "Ask him if all non-theists presuppose no God. Do you think that?"
Oh, definitely not all. Yeah, okay, so ask that again. So let me, do non-theists presuppose no God? Oh, all of them. Okay, so no, I had the question backwards in my mind. I'm sorry, my mind's working like my eyes.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay, do I think that is the reason that you come. So I know I'm speaking for someone, but I feel like that's what brings you to a non-theistic position, is presupposing that there's no God. So when you interact with an argument that says, well, we have to account for the design in the universe, even if it's bad. We have to account for that. The morality. We have to account for these things, and we're not, and we refuse to allow that conclusion to come to God. And I feel the ones that, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I feel like typically that is the hurdle that I feel like needs to be jumped with most of the atheists that I discuss, is even when I give evidence, that evidence is ruled out based on the fact that, well, there isn't a God, so that can't be evidence of a God. I don't know what it's evidence of, but it's not evidence of a God. So I don't know if that's a good answer, Paul, but great question.
So your basic idea then, so maybe I just picked this up, is that even if there was evidence for God, or as you believe that there is
Which
evidence
there is.
For God, right, the atheists just refuse to see it. Even if it was, you know, if it's glaring evidence for God, we would just be like, nope, we can't pay attention to that. We're just going to find a way to go around that. Would that be your position?
That is my position. Yeah, you've articulated it well.
Okay.
So we don't want.
Why would you think?
And I know I'm speaking for you. I know I'm speaking for you, but I feel like atheists are coming to a position that they're going like, no, I won't. Like, yeah,
why do you,
I feel
why
like.
Why do you think that would happen? Okay. Well, I just wanted to ask. So why would you think that of us? Like, why would you think that we don't want to see the evidence, even if there is evidence?
And I'd like to add to that, too. What about Christians who are very, very ardent believers who have gone to atheism? How do you explain that? The ones who were looking for evidence to affirm their beliefs and wanted it to be true that there was a God, and then just couldn't believe anymore because of what they came across. How do you explain them, too, to add on to the next question?
So that gets into a lot of assumptions on your part. And I realize that this is an assumption. That I'm going, but it gets into assumptions. So let's address one at a time. So the first is, what about the atheist or the Christian who becomes an atheist because of the evidence that they encountered? Well, I say that goes back to a misuse of the term science. So I believe that they're encountering a lot of soft science or a lot of hypothetical science that has yet to be proven. It's based on scientific principles, but it's yet to be proven science. And so they interact with this and they're like, oh, wow, I didn't know some of those things. So I feel like the false science or science used incorrectly is certainly a factor at play because they're getting bad information. So I would say that would be one reason. And then I think the problem is the brokenness of this world, and there is a lot, is really hard to deal with no matter who you are. And one of the easier ways to deal with the brokenness of this world is go, no one is orchestrating this world. We're all really just screwed up. But when you go, there is a sovereign God, you start asking, well, why in the world would this sovereign God allow all this evil? And that is a tough question. And I think that sometimes it's easier to deal with emotionally to go, well, there isn't a God. And to go, well, there's just no God. And so if there is no God, then there's no one really orchestrating the, oh, there's no one that allowed this. So
Isn't that kind of an assumption of why they were even starting to look to begin with? I mean, I know of many
people. You asked why, so I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You asked why. So it's an assumptive type of question. Sure. So I don't really know why. I'm not in their head is the best answer. But if I'm going to guess, those would be two guesses.
Okay. Yeah, because I know that there's many Christians who have come up against challenges, for example, like the type of conversations that we're having, and they leave from that conversation feeling challenged, and they go, you know, to furiously look things up so that they can say, I'll show you, here is the evidence, and, you know, you misrepresented the science, and I'll show you that God's real, and they come out of that going, oh, no, maybe I was wrong, and that causes a lot of emotional, like, because they want it to be right, and they wanted to prove it right, and they wanted to look for the best evidence to say, see, I was right about God and you were wrong, God exists, look at this, and then that take going on that journey leads them away, and it causes them in many cases severe emotional distress. So I mean, the initial argument about, and a lot of atheists are like that, like they didn't become atheists because they were like, you know what, la 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 la, I don't want to believe in God anymore,
right.
They went on a journey looking to reaffirm their beliefs so that they could tighten them up and make sure that they were standing on firm ground, and going on that journey is what led them away. And that was a really hard journey to go on. So to say something like that atheists are, you know, essentially born assuming no God and only look at evidence in the light of that presupposition in most cases isn't true, because most of the atheists were born theists and tried desperately to hold on to it and just couldn't anymore, because you can't choose what you believe, right? You either believe it because you feel like there's sufficient evidence, or something happens that causes you to not be able to do that anymore, because you can't make a conscious choice to believe something if I mean, I was one of those. I no
well,
longer can make a conscious
choice. Well, Shannon, it sounds like you disagree with me.
I what? A little bit. A little
bit. Okay. So I would lay, and that's why I had two things here. So okay. I would lay some of that on the feet of, so I feel like there's some presupposition going on, and then I do lay that on the feet of the misuse of the term science. So there's two things going on in my argument, not one. But I agree. I think you can go the other direction and take someone like Lee Strobel or Josh McDowell, who are a Christian apologist, who started off deep into atheism and really wanted to disprove the resurrection and came to the conclusion that God sent his son Jesus and he actually died and rose again. So that does exist on the other side. I don't know if I have enough stats to go which one is jumping the other way more, though I know in your world, you guys are running into these, a lot of people that are leaving. And in my world, I kind of hold up the examples of the people that are leaving atheism and coming back. So I know there's some on both sides. I don't know who has more. And I don't know that having more necessarily is evidence. But I do think that's a good point. And here's what I would add to it is I don't know if it's all atheists are, I don't think they're really aware. I think most atheists genuinely feel like they are attempting to rule out all presuppositions. I would say I think you feel that way. Mike, I certainly think you're trying to do that, but I don't think you ultimately do that. Does that make sense? I know you feel like you're trying to do that, but it's just my opinion. So I'm not saying like you're going like, does that make sense? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it makes sense. I kind of wanted to circle back to the morality thing, because you've mentioned that a couple of times about how morality would be evidence for God. And that's one of the bones I have with religion is that they often take, and I know you, I'm not sure if you believe this, but they often take credit for morality and they say that their God is the source of that morality. So would you be able to expand on that a little bit?
Oh, Mike, we take credit for all of it.
Don't limit us to morality.
We take credit for our existence. We take credit for the design.
I like
in you, the, take credit for morality. I mean, yeah, so our worldview certainly does take credit. But now, here's what I will say, though, is I feel like atheists often become... you know, there's a guy named Frank Turek who talks about atheists borrow from the Christian worldview. I think he said steal from the Christian worldview. Steal is such a pejorative term, so I could say borrow. So I would say you do have to borrow from a Christian worldview to come up with morality, though I do believe that atheists are moral. And sadly, a lot of atheists I know, well, I don't want to over, but there are many atheists that are moral than people that claim Christianity, and that's really sad, because Christians should live out their faith, and according to the Bible, you should be loving to people, you should love your neighbor the way you love yourself, and they don't do that. And I'm one of those Christians. I don't do that to the level that I would like. I fail, and I'm disappointed when I do that. So I'm far from perfect. But back to the argument, I guess. And Kai Nielsen says this. He's an atheist philosopher. He says, we have not been able to show that reason requires the moral point of view, or that really rational persons should be individual egoist or classical amoralist. Reason does not decide here. The picture I've painted for you is not a pleasant one. Reflection on it depresses me. Pure practical reason, even with a good knowledge of the facts, will not take you to morality. And I agree with him on that, and he is an atheist. I would say that reason is helpful, but it does not take you to objective morality, which is necessary for morality.
Okay.
Wow, but there's a couple of points there.
You go, Mike. you go first.
I'm trying to think of the best question, because I think we could argue morality for a very long time, because it's one of the things that I'm really interested in. But A, you said that objective morality, and you need, okay, actually, you know what I'm going to go with? What about, so you said that we borrow from Christian morality. So what about the people that came before Christianity? Were they then just immoral, or how did they, you know, they must have had moral people or people that thought about morality and tried to practice it?
Say that question one more time. I'm sorry, Mike.
So you said that that atheists borrow from Christianity for their morality.
Yeah.
So what happened pre-Christianity? Where was everybody just not moral? There were no moral thinkers. Nobody thinking about ethics.
Yeah. So the term Christianity is tough, because I don't see the genesis of Christianity being, you know, the resurrection of Christ. I see the genesis of the Christian story being God in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. So I feel like God's morality has been from the beginning. So I don't trace Christianity back to, I trace my faith, I guess it were, or before the term Christianity came on, people called themselves, or followers of Christ called themselves people of the way. And I would love to revert to that terminology. So I consider myself a person of the way. And what is that way? The way that Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And Jesus was connecting to that very first. He was saying, I'm from God, so in the beginning. So I would say that God has always written his law on our hearts. That's why we feel bad when we do evil, and we feel good when we do what is right. And that's from the beginning of time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it answers the question. I don't know if it makes sense, but...
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Because, so if you look at, you know, all, you know, the totality of human civilization, you would see that our morality has shifted quite a bit. I mean, I know you might not agree with, you know, say gay marriage, for instance, or gay rights. I don't know where you stand on that, so I'll let you answer that yourself. But, you know, overall in society, our morality has shifted from, you know, being very much anti-gay and, you know, stoning people that are gay, to being, you know, fairly liberal about it. So if it was written on our hearts, then, you know, I would think that these things wouldn't change, or at least in the vast majority of cases, they wouldn't change. So how would you account for that?
Yeah, so I would account for that through the fall. We are fallen creatures, so we have the image of God on our hearts. But when Adam and Eve brought sin into the world, that our understanding of morality automatically became inconsistent. But we do have a consistent value of life, and so while there isn't 100% agreement, that does not on what objective morality is. There is 100% agreement on the fact that morality exists. And that's kind of the argument. The argument is not that morality is agreed upon, or the specifics of morality is agreed upon by everybody. The argument is everyone agrees that morality exists. And so if morality exists, how did we get it? Where did that come from? That does not seem to be an evolutionary construct or result. That seems to be the result of someone giving that to us.
Okay, may I interject for
a
moment?
Yes, of course, yeah, go ahead.
This is one of the arguments I'm particularly passionate about. So, all right, I'm going to try to formulate my thoughts well, because I get a little bit worked up. So, if the argument is that we borrow from Christian morality, I have an issue with that, because we've all agreed that morality has evolved over time. And we can all point to passages in the Bible where God himself has engaged in actions that we today would identify as immoral, right? So a genocide, we'd say that's immoral, but God did that on a couple of occasions in the Bible. Now, because morality has evolved over time, that to me is evidence that it's influenced by society as opposed to being dictated. If we're borrowing from Christian morality, why does Christian morality change with society along with the rest of us? Why isn't it one static doctrine that we can look at? I mean, if the morality that our society has today is borrowed from Christian values, where did the Christian values come from? Why did they change with us so that today they're different than they were 1,000 years ago?
Yeah. So the argument is not that we have different perceptions of morality. I totally agree with that, Shannon. And Mike, I totally agree that our perception of morality has shifted. And in some ways, shifted for the better. You know, God forbid that we stone someone because they're gay. God forbid that we enslave someone. So I do agree that it has shifted. My point is that there still is a consistent understanding. So C.S. Lewis made this statement: how can I understand if a line is crooked if I don't have a straight line? And so I guess my question to you would be, do you believe that objective morality exists? That let me throw a question out there. You guys have been very kind to ask me questions. I really appreciate it. Let me throw you one. Shannon and Mike, do you guys believe that objective morality exists?
No.
Or is it all subjective?
No. Yes.
Yeah. I believe
you guys disagree? Go
no.
at it. Fight.
No. I think we probably agree that I believe that morality is subjective, but it's also we base our morality also on objective facts. So, I mean, on stated outcomes, right? So if you say, I don't know, I use this, it's a simplistic example, but, you know, if I tell you to stick your hand on a hot stove, you'll very quickly objectively find that it hurts. And so we can extrapolate from that and say, you know, it's not a good way for a conscious being to act would be to, you know, burn their hand and every day. Should we force people to burn their hands every day? No, because it's, you know, we start with the assumption that that people have value. And so if people have value, then we don't want to, you know, harm them. Does that make sense? it's so, kind, I kind so of mix it all up there.
But I guess my question is why do people have value? And in fact, you can make the argument that people don't have value, that we should all commit mass suicide because it would be better for the Earth for us not to be here. Well, so where do you get value from? And I guess that's my point, is that you get value. What the point I'm trying to make is that you get value from a moral being that gave it to us. So
no, I would not. I don't think that you need a moral being to find more value. But there are some people
that
would.
Where do you get it from then?
Well, there would be some people that would argue that humans don't have value, right? I mean, like a serial killer might think that that other humans don't have value, but they would probably agree that they have value, right? So to be consistent, you know, if you're a rational person and you're saying I have value because I have a vested interest in saying that I have value, as I'm sure that you would think that you have value, then to be consistent, I would have to say not just I have value, but all humans have value. Does that make sense?
I agree that humans have value. My question is where did that value come from? How do we know that? Where did that recognition of that? I agree that they have value. Right. How do you know they have value?
I think Mike's argument is that it's a sense of self-awareness that gives us an innate sense of our own personal intrinsic value in ourselves. And then we extrapolate that out and assign that same value to other people in order to be consistent. Like, I can't say... Like, we innately have a sense of our own value. And because we're people, we can transfer that statement, that belief of value, onto others because they're like us.
I agree. Where did that come from?
Self-preservation.
Self-preservation.
That sense of morality came from self-preservation?
Yeah, self-preservation, wanting to exist, wanting to be okay, wanting to enjoy your life, wanting to have sensations.
A lot of it comes down to, Ben, I mean, what kind of society do you want to live in? Do you want to live in a society that we all just go around murdering each other and raping each other? Or would you rather go live in a society like we live in where there might be a few outliers that are trying to do that, but the vast majority of us are agreeing on, you know, certain that human beings have value, and we want to promote this kind of society. We want to care about one another. We want to do all this kind of stuff, right? So, you know, that's the basis of morality, right? It's also there's a selfish component to it, because I selfishly don't want to go outside and get murdered, right? So,
so he doesn't murder anybody else because they might murder him back, I guess is what Mike's saying.
Yeah, that's the only reason why I don't murder people. I mean.
Everybody knows that we're atheists, so clearly
I mean, like, there's different components to morality, right? Like, there's empathy. I can empathize with if I see Shannon fall and hurt herself, then I can empathize with that because I can put myself in her situation and say, oh, that would suck, right? I'd probably laugh at her, but but I would still feel bad for her, right? I mean, so there's empathy. There's we're social animals, so in order to create social communities that thrive, we would have to adopt some kind of morality. There's, you know, selfish reasons, as I've pointed out. So there's all types of different reasons why we would come to that moral conclusion. And none of it needs
a thought. So Kai Nielsen disagrees with you once again, subjective, objective proof, but Kai Nielsen disagrees with you. He says, we have not been able to show that reason requires a moral point of view. And hey, you guys should agree with him because he's one of your countrymen.
All
atheists agree with each other, and all Canadians agree with each other, right? They don't ever disagree. So his argument is that reason can't do that. And your argument is, no, reason, looking inside of ourselves, we can come to objective morality. And the reason why an atheist will put his neck out on the line and go, hey, we can't show that reason comes to a moral point of view, is I do think, I totally get that you're saying, no, we can use reason to come to a place of value. You can and you can't. Because what if your life and your value is greater, and I feel like evolution could teach this, I'm not saying it does, but I'm saying it could, that your value is greater than your neighbor's. So, you know, the Bible says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. But if there is no God, why wouldn't it be better for my life if I never got caught to steal my neighbor's stuff? Because then I would have my car and my neighbor's car. I would have my money and my neighbor's money. My life is better when I violate my neighbor's rights. But what I'm saying is the image of God in us tells us that even though our initial life may be better, the whole is submitting to the authority of the universe and going, you know what, that's not right. Even though it may make my life better, it won't make everyone's life better. And I'm saying that moral judgment, that comes from God.
The first natural disaster would show you how many people would follow the rule of going and robbing places, right? Like if you ever watch footage of, like, I don't know, when there's like, you know, a hurricane and there's a horrible disaster, people are running into shopping centers. There you go. And there's people running into shopping centers.
I've lived that footage.
Yeah.
I mean, not me. That sounded really bad. It sounded like I was doing the one running into the... We've sat outside and protected places from looters. Right. I'm very aware of that. But what I'm saying is where the Bible comes in handy, is going like, hey, you know what? You shouldn't do that because God kind of frowns on that.
Well, your argument too, I mean, you said it was kind of evolution, evidence against evolution or bad, you know, a bad thing about evolution. But from an evolutionary perspective, if you look at the evolution of groups, one of the reasons that people don't act immorally within a group, you don't have immoral actors, is because they'd be ejected from the group and it would no longer have group protection. So if you were one of the people who thought you couldn't get caught, because in this scenario, there's no perfect situation where you're not going to get caught if you're stealing things from people. People are going to notice that they're missing. That's just rational reality. You're not going to be able to steal stuff from somebody and people just be like, oh, I guess I didn't have any stuff, right? People are going to notice that it's missing. They're going to seek out the person that stole it. And if you don't get caught, I guess you're one of the lucky ones. But one of the reasons that people won't do it is because, A, the fear of getting caught, and B, the fear of the consequences of getting caught. Because the group will turn on people who act immorally because they're no longer of a benefit to the group as a whole. And they will shun those people. That's why we have jails, right? Because we've decided as a society that when people act immorally, that they're to be removed so that the society can function in a moral fashion. So that's why people don't do that, atheist or otherwise. And it is because of evolution. It's because it's of no benefit to the group if you act solely in your individual interests, to the detriment of others. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so this is why I love this conversation. So I'm learning a lot, and that's a great argument. That's a great way of explaining it, but it only works partially. There's flaws within it, I guess. Here we go disagreeing again. So here's the problem, and this is what is great. So if I'm going to argue for the Christian worldview, so before I was just arguing for the existence of God, but this was great about the Christian worldview, is that it is able to help the minority. In the worldview that you just put forward, Shannon, the majority is the ruler. So whoever is the majority is making the decisions. So
the group is everybody.
That's the majority, right?
No, it's everybody. It's all of them. Everyone. So within the group, there could be subsets.
But you said if the minority steals, then the majority will look bad.
I said if you act as an individual, and if you're a moral agent, an immoral agent acting solely in your individual interest to the detriment of the group. And when I say the group in that context, I don't mean the majority. I mean the society or community that you live in. So that's everybody. That's all the people. All of the people, no matter what race, color, creed, ideology, all of the people.
It includes the minorities and the majority.
Right, exactly. All the people. Everyone.
Does that make sense? You just really ruined what I was about to say because you brought this.
Mission accomplished.
Now we can end the podcast.
Okay, so I see that point. I still think that you have a problem with objective morality with that, because you're still working from a consensus of the whole of everybody. And who is the question then becomes, who is to decide the whole of everybody, what is good for the whole? And you have conflict on that. And that conflict can become incredibly problematic. And that's where, as a
progress.
Say what?
Or it can cause progress, like Mike mentioned earlier about, you know, rights for homosexuals. That there was not previously group consensus on that issue.
But even now, even if you took Christians as a whole, there's conflict within the Christian communities, right? I mean, Catholics against Protestants. There's different denominations that would disagree on what is moral and what isn't. So it's the same as regular society, just within these groups.
So this is why I'm a literalist Christian. So while I agree that there is disagreement, there is fundamental agreement among literalist Christians that the Bible is the authority. So while a Christian may disagree as to what the Bible is communicating, I'm actually fine with another Christian, a Christian brother, that would disagree on a particular subject, but we both are going to the Bible and we just see it differently. But the reality is the Bible allows for, or the Bible creates a code of conduct that is very consistent. We could disagree on minor aspects of it, but the Bible says you shouldn't kill people, you should love your neighbor, you shouldn't steal. Like, all of these things are principles of Scripture, and I feel like it is very easy in a subjective world to go, well, I shouldn't steal, but maybe if I steal in this point, or if I stole from this group over here, that it would be better for my group. What do you do in that scenario?
You want to field that one, Shannon? I feel like
Yeah. No, it's fine. So in that those scenarios arise, right? So that's why we have things like, you know, wars or intergroup conflicts. Those scenarios are an inevitability of society existing. I think if I'm understanding correctly, your argument is if everybody adopted the Christian morality, those things wouldn't happen, right? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, and I mean, like, I understand where you're coming from. I guess what I'm saying is we as a world need a consistent sense of morality. We both agree on that, right? Would we all agree on that? That we need a consistent set of, or a consistent understanding of morality. Would we agree on that?
Yeah, I think it's beneficial for everybody to have, you know, a consensus on what's moral. Sure.
I mean, that's a good thing. Would you agree with that, Mike?
Yeah, I would agree that consistency is good. Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm saying is consistency is good, and that is what's great about the Bible, is it provides.
Oh, come on!
that is legitimate.
Okay.
I can't believe that though.
But we could say that about the Quran, right? Or
yeah, you could, Vitas, but right? The Quran is incorrect, though. The Quran doesn't have the
book. But they offer the same consistency, right? Like, you just go to that book, and then you could say, look, this is what this book says.
They don't offer an equal consistency. I wouldn't agree with that. It's like, you know, it's like calling... Yeah, no, all religions are far from the same. Religions are the same in the sense that they believe in God or some of these. But no, all religions are not the same. And that's where I don't come to the Christian worldview because, well, my dad's a Christian. I come to the Christian worldview because I've examined the world, and it is rational, it is objective, and it is explanatory. It fits into the world that I see, that I look at. And so, I think that there is value in a book that provides consistency.
Right. But what I'm saying is if I brought in a Muslim, right, or, you know, a literalist Muslim, mm-hmm. and sat him across from you, he would say the exact same things you're saying, right? He would say, my book is consistent.
Right.
My God is the moral one. And you have nothing to say that.
No, I'd have a lot of things. I'd have a lot of things to say to counteract them. That's not what this debate is about. Oh, but I have a lot of things.
That we're going to have you on with a Muslim at some point then.
That's happening now, man.
You got to be careful what you guys say. That's Yeah, no, I feel like I would have things, and I feel like, look, if you gave me convincing evidence that there was no God, I would have to go to bed tonight and really grapple with that. But I've not heard things that are convincing. I did like fleshing out your view of morality, which I want to dig into more. I felt like there were some really good things in that. I think I'm going like, oh, I really see where you're coming from with deriving morality as a whole. I feel like there's problems with that, but I don't know that I have a ready refute to those problems other than to say that I do think that objective morality is important, and you're not coming to objective morality, you're coming to consensus morality, and consensus morality can come. But I feel like that is a more tenable position than I thought it was. Does that make sense?
Well, that's good. I'm glad. It's fair enough. Yeah.
You're still wrong.
But I do
think, I can't tell you why, but you're wrong.
I do feel like a lot of Christians that I've talked to about morality, they kind of slide back into thinking that if we can't know definitively, if it's not 100% sure, then therefore it's a bad thing, right? And I don't think of morality like that. I think of morality as something that evolves along with us as a species, right? So even like consistency, like we could have talked about consistency of slavery, right? Like if we time traveled back 100 years, you would have probably found a pretty consistent basis in, you know, say America or Canada saying that slavery.
Well, thankfully,
okay.
You have to go further than that.
Whatever. I mean, like, for whatever time scale, right? Like, if you went back to the time where slavery was a thing, you would have found a consistent worldview among those people, right? So that doesn't necessarily mean it's good, right? The consistency was good back then, because we've come to a different thing now.
But I'll go back to my argument, though, is that there is consistency in the value of life. And I don't feel like the evolutionary worldview necessarily knocks that out of the park. And I don't know if you're aware of Alvin Plantinga's argument, where he goes back to, and I'd be curious where he, and this is where I would default to, but sadly I'm not as strong on the argument as I'd like to be, so I have homework to do. But he falls back to the idea that Darwin said, we cannot come to morality, and if we do come to morality, we cannot come to truth. We can't come to both, because the evolutionary progression will further us in survival of the fittest. And so if truth contradicts survival of the fittest, we will default to survival of the fittest and not to truth. So evolutionary biology has a problem that if we are progressing by survival of the fittest, then we cannot come to truth, because our truth possibly could conflict with our survival, and we will not default to that position. So I don't know if you're aware of that argument, and I'm not really strong on it. I need to get stronger. Have you ever encountered that argument before?
Versions of it. Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that from my perspective.
Then why aren't you a Christian?
Why aren't I a Christian? Oh, God, Ben. Ben.
This talk shows us why we haven't.
I've done that bad of a job.
No, you've been a great guest, Ben, honestly.
Absolutely.
Well, you're
kind
of, I've loved being on. I really enjoyed talking with you guys. And I like I said, I hoped I would learn things. I've learned a lot tonight.
We'll have to do it again. We've gone a little bit over. We've gone an hour and 50 minutes. I didn't even notice until I just looked at the clock now. Did you have any final words?
I'd like to give, could I give kind of like a final summation, and then let you guys give kind of like a final summation?
Sure.
So,
and throw out your website or wherever people could find you if they wanted to.
Okay. Yeah. If you wanted to find me, benchcutler.com. Here's my editor. Here's my social security number. So if you wanted to find me, just benshutler.com. One of the best places to follow me is my public figure page on Facebook. Though I am on Twitter, the name Ben Shetler. I am also on Instagram. That's mostly travel photos, which I enjoy posting, and faith reflections on there. But if you'd like some of this conversation, I post videos on Facebook. I call them the Curious Conversation. Foundation. And so that would be, and it's just my name though, Ben Shetler, that would be the place to go. And this just, I don't know, a summation of my arguments tonight. I, you know, obviously I'd love to do better at them, but ultimately my thoughts were, well, I don't know. I don't have to summarize them. You can go back and watch it again. But I feel strongly, my biggest question that I leave going is, even if you can derive morality, even if you can go, well, I can give some explanation, I still feel the strongest explanation of the causality of the universe, the strongest explanation of the very intricate design of the universe, though admittedly has flaws in it. The best explanation for morality is the existence of God. And that is what I come back to. But I have so much enjoyed the conversation, and I hope that, I'd love to have it again. And I'm honored for the invitation to come back. I'll definitely take you up on that, guys. And Shannon, thank you so much. You're very good at keeping it light. You have a really fun laugh, which always keeps it light, which I know that's why you have such a big following. And then Mike, the same to you, man. You are a very strong thinker. Not that Shannon is, but she's a strong thinker as well. You guys both are, but I really like how you're able to summarize someone's argument. And I felt like several times tonight, you're like, oh, here's what you're saying. And you're very good at that. You're great on that in your videos. So thank you for allowing me to throw in my 2 cents. You guys have been awesome. So thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having you. We're very thankful to have you on. You were a great guest. I had a lot of fun. I'm sure that Shannon did as well, right, Shannon?
I do. I have all kinds of fun.
It'd be no, funny if Shannon looked right into the camera and was like, no.
No. That's right.
Yeah, it was awful.
I refused to have fun.
Because my arguments were so convincing, wasn't it?
No. Sorry. I'm an atheist, so no matter how convincing your arguments are, I refuse to believe them and I won't entertain anything to the contrary.
Yeah, you're presupposed.
I presuppose that God doesn't exist, so I won't even listen to you anymore.
The boat doesn't exist.
That's right.
Even though I'm floating.
No, this is an airplane, not a boat. I'm sorry. I've decided. nothing will dissuade me. But yeah, thank you so much for being. You're fantastic to deal with. And I have to say, Ben is the most prompt and very easy to correspond with. You're very organized. You are an absolute delight from start to finish to deal with.
So my wife is laughing right now as you're saying very organized.
Well, you gave off the impression of perhaps being very organized.
I'll take it.
Well, thank you, Ben, and to the rest of you, thanks for joining us.